It's the JT the Brick Show, broadcasting live from the Finley Cadillac Performance Studio, your silver and black home to sound off for over 25 years. And now, here's JT the Brick.
Yes, welcome back. It's a Take the Pain Monday. You know, my favorite movie of all time is Platoon. You might say, that's weird. Yeah, it was a great Academy Award-winning movie, great movie, and there's a scene where Tom Berenger says, take the pain, where you had to take the pain. At that point in the movie, if you know the movie, you got to take the pain, and I call it a Take the Pain Monday, and this one hurts me more than most because I was all in on this game. Not that everybody else on our channel didn't want to win, or we have journalists here, radio hosts, you know, guys, you know, and gals, everybody behind the scenes, we all want to win because we're on the flagship of the Raiders. But I really wanted that one. We had the Charger open. We were crushing the Chargers the whole offseason. I thought the Raiders would beat the Chargers. They did not. So I need to take the pain. And I'm doing that today. And I'll get through it. It's not the end of the world. It's not life and death. But it feels really like a blown opportunity for the Raiders. A blown opportunity for a team that has opportunities in front of them this year to win games against teams they're supposed to. That was a game they could have won. And especially if you saw the tale of two halves. So we'll dive into that. As Sam Munson's back with us, kind enough, really excited. He's one of the top NFL analysts, period, on any platform. And he joins us on Monday. So, Sam, good to have you back. Tell us about this new platform and where everybody can find you before we get going.
Yeah, myself and Steve Palazzolo have taken our show, taken our podcast to the 33rd team. So we have a new title. It's called Check the Mic, Check the M-I-C microphone over at the 33rd team. We're up on YouTube or wherever you get your podcast from.
Fantastic and continued success. I want to jump in. One of the things I got right in the offseason, I thought Cincinnati would have a problem with the egos. Historically, the Brown family doesn't like to pay. They paid Burrow. Now Chase wants to get paid. We saw the C.D. Lamb holdout, what was happening with Brandon Ayuk. The background of Ja'Marr Chase and Higgins not being happy, do you think that had an effect on their preparation and planning coming into the Patriot loss?
Yeah, it's tough to know because obviously T. Higgins is out now with this hamstring injury. Ja'Marr Chase was kind of belatedly listed with having an illness as well. Obviously not having him throughout the entirety of preseason or training camp, it didn't help. You know, there's rust involved. You want your quarterback and your receivers to be on the same page and in sync and just used to throwing to each other for that to be able to hit the ground running and be able to pick up the way they left off, and the Bengals weren't able to do that. It's difficult to know whether Ja'Marr Chase's illness played into that, but the Bengals now have just got this track record of starting slowly in the season, and there's always a couple of excuses, there's always a couple of reasons for it, but it's a concerning trend now, and it's one that's cost them kind of one of the easier games on their schedule, one of the games that was supposed to be, you know, reason Cincinnati can be really good this year because of that fourth duel they got because of last season, and instead they end up losing a game at home to a team that was supposed to be one of the worst teams in football.
Sam Munson is our guest. The Chargers had absolutely nothing in the first half. I mean, Herbert, they could barely run plays. They were going three and out, and the Raiders couldn't take advantage of it with Gardner Minshew, with Devontae, Brock Bowers, and their weapons there. And then the Chargers just wore the Raiders down and ran it down their throat in the fourth quarter. How'd you see that game?
Yeah, the kind of classic Jim Harbaugh offense, you know, just running the ball, grinding, attritional. The really big story, I think, for the Chargers, though, was the defense. It was a different unit than any Chargers defense over the past several seasons. That's the best run defense that the Chargers have had in years, and is going to be, I think, a completely different proposition now. You saw sort of rejuvenated Khalil Mack, rejuvenated Joey Bosa, all these guys that have been underachieving recently or injured were kind of back with a vengeance and making plays. So I think the Chargers are going to be a very different team on defense, and maybe they're not going to need that offense to be lights out every single week, and they can execute a game plan that looks a little bit more like College Michigan, you know, the team that Jim Harbaugh's had over the last few years.
Were you more impressed with the Cowboys and how efficient they were, or the surprise that Deshaun Watson and this offense was just lost at home for Cleveland's home opener?
I don't think we can be surprised anymore that Deshaun Watson is playing terrible football. I mean, he has played terribly since the Browns acquired him, and that shows no signs of changing. It appears to be just the reality of who he is right now. And I think we can all speculate why, you know, the reasons for that, but it's getting harder and harder to be surprised by it. I think Dallas, though, was very impressive. You know, this was an offseason where the vibes, the feeling about Dallas had been mostly negative, that they got worse, that they weren't going to be as good as they were last season, that they've taken a step back, and instead they came out there absolutely cooking, looking as good as they did any time last season. Maybe they are going to be as good as they were a year ago. This team, only the Kansas City Chiefs, has won more regular season games than Dallas over the last three seasons, and on that evidence, they look like they're going to give them a run for it again this year.
Sam Munson, the new co-host on Check the Mic, the podcast on the 33rd team with Steve Palazzolo, kind enough to join us. Baker Mayfield looks good, and if you go back and think of the teams that passed on Baker Mayfield or didn't want to step up and commit to him, I think there's several teams. I'm in Vegas, looking around the country on teams that wanted a quarterback and didn't want to pay $60 million or $55 million and could have got Baker. How happy are the Buccaneers with him, with his evolution there?
Yeah, I mean, not just that, but you've also got the ultimate irony that the Cleveland Browns could use a quarterback like Baker Mayfield right now. He looks fantastic. There was a lot of questions this offseason. Dave Canales leaves. Were the Bucs going to be able to keep going the way they were when Canales was the offensive coordinator and was sort of credited for rejuvenating and resuscitating Baker Mayfield's career? Well, week one, Baker looked fantastic. That was one of the best games he's played as a Buccaneer. Their receivers looked great. They all looked healthy and dangerous. You've got the caveat, the little context that you have to say, well, yeah, but Washington's secondary looks like it's going to be one of the worst in the NFL. But Baker Mayfield looked absolutely fantastic.
I move on to a couple other games that I didn't find and watch the full game as I was working. But Bo Nix, as you looked at the tape on him with the Seahawks, I didn't expect the Broncos to win. The game was closer than I thought there. But what to take away from Bo Nix's first performance on the road?
Yeah, it was a pretty rough debut, and it wasn't just Bo Nix. I think all of these young quarterbacks really struggled right away, and really offense was down across the board in the NFL in week one. There were some historically low numbers, so it wasn't just the rookie QBs, but Bo Nix, anytime he had to push the ball deep down the field, or not even deep down the field, just further than 5 yards from the line of scrimmage, got himself into trouble, made some significant mistakes, had some turnovers or turnover-worthy plays, and just generally looked a little bit overwhelmed. The best things that he was doing were taking off and scrambling and trying to make some plays with his legs. But yeah, that was not a situation that Sean Payton would have wanted, that Bo Nix would have been interested in, because he threw the ball a lot and didn't get a lot out of it.
Sam Munson is our guest. You did a nice cut up of Dexter Lawrence in that debacle in that Giants loss, but he had a big game, the pressures that he was able to put out there on Sam Darnold. How bad were the Giants offensively, considering how good of a player Dexter Lawrence is?
Yeah, I mean, basically, he was the only player on defense who was doing anything for the Giants. I mean, his pass rush win rate from a nose tackle alignment most of the time is going to be around 50%, which is absolutely ridiculous. 25% is a really good Pro Bowl caliber number. 50% is basically unheard of, and it didn't make any difference. I mean, Dexter Lawrence is basically the only reason that Sam Darnold had any incompletions in the day. But outside of that, Darnold and the Vikings offense had their way with the Giants, and were just playing pitch and catch all day.
How good was Derek Carr, especially under pressure here? Because that game was over early as they blew out the Panthers 47-10.
He was fantastic, and he laid down his stall very early in the game. Rashid Shaheed absolutely smoked J.C. Horn deep down the field, and Derek Carr stood in the pocket in the face of pressure, delivered the ball to him, got it there, not just an underthrown pass that Shaheed could catch, but actually really got it to him into his hands. Great big boy play from Derek Carr, and he just kept going throughout that game. Looked absolutely fantastic, and quietly, he was very good in the second half of last season. It's just that everyone had already written the Saints off by that point. If Derek Carr and the Saints are going to pick up that way, they're going to be a real team this year.
Yeah, I would agree. I thought they played outstanding. The Jaguars got off to a good start against the Dolphins. Did they let the Dolphins back in the game, or were the adjustments by Mike McDaniel in that offense enough to get them a win at home?
No, I think they definitely did let them back in the game. But Miami took advantage of those plays. There was a couple of games yesterday where, you know, one big play was a massive swing in either direction. The Jags, you know, had the lead. They were in a great position. They were about to go in for another touchdown, and Javon Holland forces a fumble on Travis Etienne down by the goal line. Miami ends up getting the ball back, and on that drive was the big Tyreek Hill play that turns into a touchdown. So that's a 14-point swing in that game and ends up giving Miami the lifeline that they needed to eventually snatch it at the end.
Wrapping up with Sam Munson. What a great job he does. We get him on Mondays. Want to ask you about Kirk Cousins. A lot of the young quarterbacks played poorly, and Kirk Cousins is supposed to play big, so we're not talking about Michael Penix Jr.
Yeah, and it was a tough game for him. It wasn't all his fault, but I think some of it certainly was. The offensive line was poor against Pittsburgh. T.J. Watt was absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah.
He was destroying Caleb McGarry at right tackle. But three out of those five starters for the Atlanta Falcons, I think, had rough days in pass protection. That's not going to help a quarterback like Kirk Cousins, who has always needed, you know, pretty good protection from his offensive line, and it just wasn't there. And then for as much as it's a very similar system that Zach Robinson is employing relative to Kevin O'Connell, they're from the same Sean McVay tree, there are differences. And I think you can see Cousins is not quite as intuitively familiar with the new system as he was with the old. And the worst plays that he had were late in the down. It was trying to make a split-second adjustment and go somewhere with the football. And whereas in Minnesota, I think he knew exactly where to go any single play, he's not there yet in Atlanta, and that's where he was making big mistakes.
Hey, Sam, finally, before you go, every year I do an 0-2 podcast. The teams that go 0-2 are just pretty much buried. Emmitt Smith sat out 1 year. They were 0-2. Cowboys won the Super Bowl. But digging a hole in the NFL is not where you want to be. I thought so many teams played poorly in week one, but the teams that played poorly and won, like the Chargers didn't play great, but they won. And then especially the performances that we saw from a couple other teams. Look at Pittsburgh. They didn't play a great game. They didn't have Russell Wilson, and they won the game. What about a couple of teams that didn't play well, but they got a win, and they won a game which could really build motivation in the building, put a stinker behind them where they can go out and maybe go 2-0?
I mean, if you look at Chicago,
yes.
Tennessee should have had that game wrapped up way before the end, and then a blocked punt and a big couple of plays swung in their direction, and suddenly Chicago gets a win despite their number one overall pick rookie quarterback throwing for whatever it was, 96 yards. That easily could have been a miserable first game for the Bears if they'd gotten beaten by the Titans and Will Levis, and you know they hadn't been able to get anything going on offense, and all the excitement, all the hype for the Chicago team would have just gone up in smoke. But instead, they get a win. They're able to kind of put this behind them. Hopefully, you know, Caleb Williams will settle down and have a much better week two. But I think that perfectly fits that description, where because they won, we can kind of sweep a lot of that under the rug and maybe just build on the win. Whereas if it had gone the other way, it would have been almost crisis situation for Chicago right out of the gate.
The podcast has moved to the 33rd team. Check the mic, Sam Munson. We're fortunate to get him every Monday. Thanks for doing this, Sam. Have a great week.
Anytime. Take it easy.
You got it. Sam Munson joining us. That's a good guest. We get him in this window every Monday, and we need him every Monday because I can't go 62 minutes straight on a Raider loss. I got to hear around the rest of the NFL. We got to talk NFL. Going to talk NFL. We got other fans of other teams who listen to us, too, so we want to sprinkle that all in with everybody else there. So if you're listening to our show and you're not a Raider fan, you are welcome to call the show about your team. We are a full-service sports talk show here on Raider Nation Radio. We're coming off a loss on Sunday, so Raider Nation on Mondays, this is the place you come to sound off like you got a pair. We got Mark Anderson coming up in a moment. I'm wide open to hear from you now. 702-365-9200. Mark and San Mateo, thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, JT. Mm-hmm. I wanted to say everybody's been talking about the 4th-and-1 and not going for it, and I get it. I was upset about that too, but to me, what was even more egregious, JT, was the fourth and one that we got stopped on, and Trey Tucker looks like he gets the first down. How in the heck is somebody not up in the booth saying to AP, let's challenge it? My thing is, you know, even if you challenge and you don't get it and you're inches instead of a full yard away, that should have been challenged. That was just, I mean, that can't happen, not in the NFL. Maybe in high school, but not the NFL. That was just terrible. I wanted to know your thoughts on that.
Walk me through that again, because Bobby was talking to me. What exact play did you mention?
Yeah, so the fourth and one in the first quarter where they get stopped.
They came up short
at halftime with the red flag in your pocket. I mean, how is somebody from the booth not saying down to him, hey, you got to challenge that? I mean, we could all see it on our couches that he was right near the line. That's uncalled. Yeah. I mean, that can't happen, JT.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, it's okay on that. I don't think that was that big of a deal. You did, and that's why we have an open forum here. Thanks for checking in. But look, they didn't get it. I didn't think they got it on that play. But if you're saying, you know, why not throw the challenge there? Why not look for it? Why not go for a break there? I'm okay with that. That's fair to do that. I think the bigger issue is what we covered on. Why did Antonio Pierce not go for it on fourth down and punt? Because he thought the defense could win the game that way. I didn't think the defense, maybe they score. The offense is supposed to score. The defense, it's a bonus when they do. I would like to have seen Minshew have a chance on another set of downs. We're brought to you by the DeCastaverde Law Group. The brothers have your back. You know, the brothers win. Brotherswin.com. Alex and Orlando DeCastaverde, they're back with us, our proud partners. Look, I got guys that can help you in a law group if you get into an accident and get injured. Look at all the roads out here, all the cones, all the accidents. I'm telling you, the legacy of their dad, the law firm that they have in this state, the DeCastaverde Law Group, give them a call and bookmark them in your phone.
It is frustrating, but it's also encouraging. You know, like, I think we still have a lot of juice on offense. We have a lot of dudes, and once it clicks, it's going to click, you know. So I think we just got to keep pressing and keep moving forward, and we're going to be fine.
Gardner Minshew, the post game from last night at SoFi, and Coach spoke today. Mark Anderson, our insider, kind enough to join us every other Monday. We're thrilled to have him. And, Mark, you were asking questions today, and when you look at this team's performance, I'll go first. I thought they had an opportunity to win the game in the first half. They could have went up 14-3, 17-6, whatever it was going to be, and they just didn't have the killer instinct with this offense to attack. Why didn't the Raiders attack more deep downfield with this offense?
That's a really good question, and I just don't know if they just don't trust Minshew to do that. Maybe, but I also think it's kind of Pearson's kind of is in his DNA, you know. Mm-hmm. As a defensive coach, you know, they tend to want to play it kind of, you know, conservatively. Mm-hmm. Maybe especially for an opening game, you got a lot of new pieces, and that could be it. I agree. I thought they had a chance to basically win the game in the first half, and you know, Minshew's fumble, which I think was just a killer. I mean, if he doesn't do that, I think they probably walk out of the winners, because you think they at least get a field goal out of that.
How'd you cover the story that they punted instead of going for it on fourth down in the Chargers zone, down 16-10? I was really surprised by that. And the more I thought about it, my analysis, which could be wrong, is that I don't think they had a play they're confident in yet. It's Getsy's first ever game. He's got a lot of young tight ends. They should have a go-to play if the life is on the line that they can run and get a yard. Why didn't they have a play set up at that moment?
I also thought they should have gone for it when they kicked the field goal right before that, the drive before that, too. I think they didn't trust the running game yesterday. Mm-hmm. That's what I think happened. They went for it early, got stopped. Zamir White really did not have a good day. I'm not saying it's just him. It could be the combination of the backs and the offensive line. Colton Miller just getting back from after missing so much time, and he didn't look like himself. And you didn't have Jackson Powers Johnson at left guard. So, although they have a veteran there, so I just don't think that they felt comfortable with the running game, and they couldn't establish one. And so I think when it came down to it, I think Antonio thought, well, you know what, I think we're better off just hoping our defense, which has been great all day, holds them one more time, and and maybe we'll get another shot. But I do think in that situation, you got to go for it.
Mark Anderson is our guest, AP sports reporter here in Vegas covering the Raiders. I look at the Raiders going forward here, and they were gashed on a couple of big runs by Dobbins. So I think their defense was exceptional in the first half. I really believe it's fundamentally sound. But the issue I have now going forward is stopping the run. This is a copycat league. The Ravens look at the tape and see a couple of big runs right up the middle. What do the Raiders have to clean up there?
Well, you saw it in preseason, too. Mm-hmm. You know, they had trouble stopping the run in the preseason. And I thought that was a big concern coming into this game. And I thought the first half they did a fantastic job. But I think the Chargers kind of stuck with it. And that's, you know, just what Jim Harbaugh's going to do. You expect that from one of his teams, that they're just going to try and stick with the run. And he did. And it finally paid off. And I do think that. I do think the Raiders are generally going to be pretty good against the run. If they can stay healthy, obviously you're seeing some problems with Malcolm Kuntz not playing and Tyree Wilson's hurt. So, you know, that's a real issue. But I agree that, especially when you look at what Baltimore has with Lamar Jackson, who's so dynamic with his feet, he's going to be really a real big challenge for them this week.
If you would have told me 2 weeks ago when Kuntz was healthy and Tyree Wilson was pretty much healthy, I was encouraged by that. I thought that Kuntz would play, and if Tyree just exploded onto the scenes, it'd make for some interesting competition with a couple of packages that they had to move Tyree inside. Now with both of them gone for a while, I don't know what Tom Telesco is going to do. Snowden can play, but they've burned through their depth at that position with one player in Kuntz who's really good and I thought was going to have a banner breakout year. And then with Tyree Wilson, I don't know what to say. I hope the kid's okay. I hope it's not serious and he can come out there, but he's been very disappointed since they drafted him.
Yeah, NFL Network is reporting it's a sprained knee, and it's not a terrible injury. But, yeah, they'll be without him for a little while at least. But, yeah, Antonio said today at the presser that Tom Telesco is working the phones to – try to get someone in here. So, you know, just, you know, who's out there though, you know, that's the question. So I don't know that whoever's out there is really going to be the answer. Maybe it may be more of a band-aid thing, but that's what they're going to have to do. But yeah, it only puts more pressure on Max Crosby and Christian Wilkins and those guys. And particularly Crosby, because, you know, you would like to get him off the field some, get him some rest, but I don't know how much you can do that. Now he didn't miss a snap yesterday.
And, Mark, finally, this is a really big gut clinch time for this team. They have to play well in Baltimore. They have to. And the only way they're going to play well is if they do something that we're not expecting. And for me, it's simple. I'm not into this take the air out of the ball, shorten the game, and hope you're lucky to win it late. I think that Minshew, with these gifts that he has on offense, he's had games where he's beaten good opponents by putting up 35, 36 points. It doesn't happen all the time, but I think he has the talent and the ceiling to maybe throw up a game or two like that in the course of the year. He might not have the year to play this position. The clock could be ticking on him if he doesn't have a big-time performance on the road. What do you think the Raiders have to do to stay in this game with the Ravens this coming Sunday?
I completely agree with you. I think you got to let him loose a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, Trey Tucker had a fantastic preseason. I think you've got to give him a chance to make plays down the field. And that will only open things up for Jacoby and for Devontae, and as well as the tight ends. And, you know, and Gardner's got to do his part, too. I mean, he had that one, I think, third down. Devontae runs the route to the first down area, puts his hands up, stands there, and Gardner just doesn't see him. And I just, you know, so he's got to be better at recognizing that as well. But, yeah, I think they need to take shots downfield, and that will only help their running game, too. And I do think Zamir White's going to play well eventually. It may take a little while, but he showed enough at the end of last season. I think he'll be okay. But, like I said, it may be a while for they actually get there.
You got it. Thanks, Mark. Appreciate you. Talk to you soon.
Sounds good, JT. Thanks for having me on.
That's Mark Anderson from the AP. That was brought to you by Woodson Bourbon Whiskey. Man, do I have a lot to tell you about Charles. I watched him early in the morning. I got up. You know, that was a wild Sunday. You wake up early in the morning, Tyreek Hill is in trouble. Then you find out that Justin Fields is going to play over Russell Wilson. Then Dak Prescott gets paid. And I turn on the Fox pregame show, and Charles Woodson is there doing an unbelievable job after Charles was in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Right? So Charles is there for the Michigan-Texas game with Matthew McConaughey and all that. Then I hear about Charles in L.A. because the Raiders had a big corporate event for their corporate sponsors that they brought out there to the Los Angeles game, and there's Charles Woodson. And it was all based around the Hall of Famer and his Woodson bourbon whiskey. Incredible. So Charles will work and outwork everybody, not only as an athlete, a football player, a businessman, an entrepreneur, but now with Woodson bourbon whiskey, it's everywhere. As I'm saying this, I looked 6 minutes ago, and I have a special salute to Emmett Smith with the Golden Jacket Old Fashioned made with Woodson bourbon whiskey at Emmett's Vegas here. Now, I've been to Emmett's a lot. My buddy Todd helped open it up and done a great job with Kelly Jones and my friends there. And Charles is a big supporter of what Emmett Smith is trying to do here, right there at this unbelievable location, right on the strip, right across from Wynn. So if you haven't been to Emmett's yet, I had my dad's birthday party there. I emceed an event for Emmett there already. It's fantastic. And I go into Emmett's and I'm like, wait a second. This is going to be a steakhouse, right? No, no, no. My mom got the sushi boat. And there's sushi and there's a crab and seafood tower. You won't believe the food there, man. And you know what I get when I go to Emmett's? The bolognese. I get the bolognese. It's some of the best bolognese with Chef Steve Menino that I've ever had. So every time I've been to Emmett's, I've loved it. And now there's a connection for us, and there has been, with Woodson Bourbon Whiskey. Charles built that legend, that Hall of Fame legend, with the Intercept wine, and now what he's doing with Woodson Bourbon Whiskey. Ask for it everywhere. If they don't have it, tell me. I'll tell my buddy Chris, the whole team over there, and they'll get Woodson Bourbon Whiskey into your favorite establishment on top of all the other great locations that are here in the Valley and nationally. I mean, look what he's doing at Michigan and in Green Bay. This is an incredible story for Charles Woodson. Murph is in Buffalo. Hey, Murph, what's going on, buddy? Good to hear from you.
Hey, JT. Yeah, thanks. Hey, I just want to start off with saying I do not agree with not going for it on fourth down, but it is what it is, right? And it was AP's first game officially as our head coach, as our leader. So hopefully, you know, he learned a little bit from this loss. It's tough to win a game when, you know, you lose the turnover battle 3-0, and that Gardner Minshew play was just, like we're saying, just what a fluke play that
was. Yeah, it was a fluke play.
But I will say this, that defense – I'm very excited about the defense. They were hitting hard,
yeah.
And I'm pretty confident in them. It's on the offense for me, and I would just love to see them focus on Devontae, please. Mm-hmm. And that's my thing, right? Let's clean it up, and hopefully we can win battle Baltimore. Well, I was at the season opener for Buffalo last year when they sent us to Buffalo. I went to that game, and you know, that's tough, and they're doing it to us again in Baltimore, but hopefully we fare a little better. And you know, it's only the first week, so hey man, we're gonna get better.
I think the Raiders are gonna get better. Thanks for the call, Murph. Appreciate it. This is a tough day for a lot of Raider fans, and this was not the day that I wanted. I didn't expect this to be this way. I thought the Raiders would win the game. But I'm more disappointed on how they lost the game. They lost the game because they didn't have the killer instinct to go for it on a fourth down, where I think they should have. Okay, live another day with that one. And they made mistakes that I don't think they're going to make in every game. The defense played well. Brock Bowers had a really good game. Madison shows he has a burst and can play. And Zeus is the number one, so we know there's two running backs who you can count on there. But the Devontae thing's interesting. Devontae's interesting to me because I think he's saying everything correctly and people are really reading into him. Is he happy? Is he not? Is he happy? All accounts are, from my seat here in this studio, he's happy. Is he frustrated? He was frustrated last year watching Netflix. Is he frustrated after this game? I would be. He didn't get enough targets. He should have got more targets. This is the Chargers. They came into the game saying, I couldn't believe it on the pregame show, that he's had the most yards per average against the Chargers and any other human being ever, including Jerry Rice. I mean, you got to have more plays to him. You got to have more calls to him on your play sheet. Rich Gannon pointed that out to myself and Eric Allen early this morning. Mike in Jersey. What's going on, Mike?
Hey, JT. How's it going?
It's been better, man. I'm all right. How you doing?
Good. I'm coming out to Vegas next week for the Carolina game, so I'm looking forward to it. As far as the game goes, you know, I watch the first play of the game, and they do a pass. I'm like, okay, looks good.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, they just try to run it and run it. I understand you have to establish a running game. But the times that Gardner Minshew passed the ball, it worked. I mean, and then another thing is I heard all preseason, oh, they got three tight ends, we're going to do 12-man line and all that. Where was that yesterday? I mean, I'm sorry, I know it's one game, but Luke Getsy's play calling makes Josh McDaniels' play calling look good. That was just bad yesterday. And you can't expect the defense to carry the load. I mean, they get gassed at the end. That's why Dobbins got that big run. You can't keep them out there that long. Yeah. They got to do something.
Well, they have a lot of looks, and as Gannon told me today, Mike, the way that Getsy installed this offense and the look of it yesterday, the look of it, wasn't bad. It was okay, but they didn't execute when they had to. The two turnovers, Zamir's fumble, Gardner Minshew's fumble, and then there was an interception again by Gardner on a tip ball. You got to take all those three away. There's got to be a game like that where we don't get a fumble from Zamir, not one. And Gardner's never going to fumble the ball behind the line of scrimmage again. You take that away, I think the Raiders win the game, but I can't go back. I can't go back on tape and take away their turnovers. They had three to the Chargers, none. That's why they lost.
I know. It's just hard because I see it look good at one point when he throws to Bowers, he throws to Devontae, he's hitting the passes, and then all of a sudden, like, they shot themselves in the foot. Yeah. And you know, I just hope it gets better because, you know, I know it's water under the bridge. I know it's under the bridge. I know the passes have passed, but I just had a feeling if there was a certain quarterback still on this team, I think they would have won the game yesterday.
Well, that's fair. Anybody could say they would. Derek, the way Derek played yesterday, if he played that way, yeah, the Raiders would have won if he was the Raider quarterback, but he's not anymore. Hey, very quickly, on Saturday night, my wife and I drove out to Raising Cane's because I had an appearance out there on 5th and Deer Springs. That's in North Las Vegas. I haven't been out there. I haven't been out there in a while. My wife reminded me when my kids played club baseball, we used to go out there. They built up that whole area, and right there in the middle of it is a Raising Cane's Chicken Fingers. So we were out there for 2 hours, and we sat outside. We had a box combo, and there were a couple of Raider fans there we were able to give some shirts and some prizes to. We had a great time. So we're there from 5 to 7. I want to thank the entire Raising Cane's team. They threw us a good time out there. The store is brand new. It was gorgeous, fantastic, and there were so many kids coming in from high school that watched high school football on Friday night and wanted to go on Saturday and go have a good time. So I want to thank Jamel, who was out there. He welcomed us there. We had a good time. Man, I drank a couple of those lemonades. My wife had the sweet tea. We sat outside and watched the sunset in North Las Vegas, Raising Cane's Chicken Fingers. Really important partner for us, the best chicken fingers out there. And they do a lot of fundraising, and that's why I got involved with them. I love their fundraising efforts every school year. So the next time you want to host a fundraiser, receive 15% off the net sales back when customers mention the group. Go to Raising Cane's Chicken Fingers, all the locations here in the Valley, but that new store out there on 5th and Deer Springs out there in North Las Vegas, really happy we were invited out there, and we had a great time on Saturday night. And then I didn't go out on Saturday night. And ring the bell. I think that's the first time in 2 years I didn't go out on a Saturday night to a concert, a dinner, and drop 500 bones or do something stupid. Maybe I need to do that every Saturday night, Bobby, or Friday. Go to Raising Cane's. Keep me off the strip. One love.
Matthew Green, the tight end in for the first time, along with Malik Bradford, the wide receiver wearing number 89. Here's Green up the middle. He's into some space. He cuts through, down to the near side, across the 15, the 10, the 5, the touchdown. Devin Green hits pay dirt for the first time, and the Rebels into the 70s. They lead it 71-14, pending the extra point.
Rebels Radio, how about that? 70-plus points? Good for them. Like I said, I'd love nothing more than UNLV to win in this town. I've been here a long time, friends with many of the alumni, Jersey Joe Haro, Steve Stallworth, The guys who have played for UNLV in the past, they seem to be great, and now they got a team with Barry Odom that can win and beat good teams. So nice. Get some butts out there. If you're a student, I'm not. I went to Geneseo State University. We didn't have a football team. We had a great fraternity. We drank a lot of kegs, but we didn't have a football team. If you're living in Vegas and you go to UNLV, it should be mandatory you're going to see your college football team play football games. I mean, I don't know. I'm not out on a limb here, Bobby. I don't go to UNLV. Mm-hmm. My son goes to ASU. He don't go to a lot of ASU games because he's a senior in Scottsdale that does some other cool stuff. But I think that students, when they go to UNLV or other schools, should get their butts in the game on Saturdays.
I'll tell you what. This is the first Saturday that this has ever happened.
Yeah.
7,600 awesome. Students all claimed their tickets and all showed up for the game.
I love that. I love that, and that's why I wanted to bring that up. Let's see more of that, and more fans buy tickets. They're playing at Allegiant Stadium. They're playing at Allegiant Stadium at that price. Well, we're paying for season tickets for the Raiders, and you can go for that price to see a UNLV game and sit in the seats? That sounds like a home run. Robert in Portland as we wrap up the show. Hello, Robert.
JT, I really think we have to take pause here. Minshew won last year at Baltimore, 22-19, didn't turn the ball over at all, and the guy went 8-7 from that point forward. Before we get all shook, but you and I talked last week, I predicted if they didn't turn the ball over and they turned the ball over twice themselves, they would win. Only Philly won this week by turning the ball over more than their opponent. So that usually is a telltale sign, but I'm not going to, get all over. Minshew's got a lot of wins in him yet. I'm not going to give up on the guy. They certainly need to stop the run. Baltimore, though, is capable of having, a game in Baltimore where they may not win. That was an overtime game last year that Minshew pulled out. So I'm not going to give up on the guy. And I sure hope Kuntz comes back soon.
Yeah, he's not coming back soon. He's going to miss the first four games. So he misses the first four games on IR. And for Gardner Minshew, in this last game, he threw for 257 yards. And overall, his completion percentage was 75.8. 75.8. I think his career is, 61 or 63? I'll double-check on that. Come on. I mean, when you take a look at Gardner Minshew's career, I mean, the guy threw for 75% against the Chargers in L.A. I mean, what more do you want? 80%? He's not going to throw for 90%. The problem was they didn't take any shots. Oh, where's the JT pet peeve meter at? Where's it at? It's pretty high. It's over 7, right? And El Presidente does the pizza reviews. He doesn't go past 7, 8. My pet peeve, you got the two things that drove me nuts today. Did we throw it in the end zone? No. Played a football game and didn't throw the ball in the end zone. Played a National Football League game and didn't throw the ball, if I recall, out of the end zone, back into the end zone. Come on, man. Throw the ball in the end zone. Bishop Gorman does it 16 times a game. Throw the ball in the end zone. You get a flag. You know what happened last night? I was watching Detroit and the Rams. And the game's down the stretch, last quarter. Deep ball in the end zone. Flag. First and goal at the 1. Touchdown. Throw the ball. Throw the ball in the end zone, please. And pet peeve, the biggest one, not going forward on 4th-and-1. I thought they didn't have a play. Now, that'll get back to me. Someone's going to take a shot at me somewhere and say, what do you mean you're saying the Raiders don't have a play? Let me elaborate on that. The greatest Raider teams I've covered in my career, and I know every single player to ever play in Raider history who was alive from 1998, which was pretty much most of them when I came to this team. So I'm talking Jim Otto before he passed away, Ted Hendricks, Fred Biletnikoff, Tim Brown, Charles Woodson, all the guys that I know, whenever era they ever played in, they had a play on offense that they went to as their go-to play. Now, when you have Tim Brown and Jerry Rice, it's pretty cool. When you got Fred Biletnikoff, Cliff Branch, and Dave Casper, it's pretty cool. We got some good players on this team, man. Have a play for each of them that is their go-to play. So the next time you have a 4th-and-1 and you're trailing by not 8, not 7, by 6, you can run that play and move the chains and maybe win the game. I don't know if they have that play yet. At least they didn't break it out. and they didn't break it out in a game I thought they really needed to win. Like, what are you saving that play for? What is that play that Getsy has to Michael Mayer that you and I don't know about? John Harbaugh doesn't know about. Jim doesn't know about Harbaugh because they're talking all week. By the way, we're facing two coaches this week. We're facing Jim Harbaugh and John Harbaugh because Jim's on the phone every night with John telling him what worked against the Raiders. And just have something that can counter that. Have something that can counter that, and I think Getsy will have that. I'm pretty sure he'll be able to get that. Calvin in California, thanks for waiting.
How you doing, JT?
Hey, Calvin.
Well, you were reading my mind. You said everything I was going to say. I swear to you, It was frustrating for Mitchell to have all that yardage, no completions inside the 20, okay, let alone the end zone, but nothing inside the 20-yard line. Those are like empty calories, like cereal. All those yards and nothing in the end zone that really mattered. I thought the fumble changed the whole game. For him to bobble that pass, and that was the whole reason why he supposedly got the start over Aiden, was he wasn't going to make any silly mistakes against a strong defense, and he'd be more mobile. I saw neither of that. We might as well have Aiden starting. I'm very frustrated that we didn't have a play. Like you said, any offensive coordinator worth their salt, if you're a professional at anything, you got to have a play when you need one, whether it's basketball, football, baseball. There's got to be a play to steal a base. There's got to be a play to get an open three. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was just, it's very frustrating. It reminded me a lot of the Vikings game last year where all they needed was one good play to win that game, and they couldn't, and they didn't have one. And it didn't seem like they even tried. Try and block a punt. Try and fake a punt to do something, but nothing. And so I think it was a conservative thought process. I think Pierce is being too conservative. I really think that. I love Pierce. I love how geeked up he gets everybody. I love the excitement that he talks to, but he's gotta come out of the shell. He has to. He's got too many weapons.
All right.
Too many weapons.
Thanks for the call. You know what's interesting about Coach Pierce? I think he's such a good guy. All the coaches I've worked for in this organization all treated me really well and were good guys. You might not have liked them. You might have thrown darts at a few of them. They've all been good guys. And Coach Pierce is just different because he's emotional. He's a guy's guy, and I want him to win, desperately want him to win. He's been in a lot of situations with some tough decisions on short yardage. I wish that didn't happen. Instead of someone going down short of the first down because their knee doesn't get over the line and it's third and one instead of first and 10. That's been happening to him a lot. I wish it would be easier on him. How many times you throw a pass on first down and it's caught second and one? Well, why isn't that a first down? Now we got to run a play and start a running back 7 yards deep to go 1 yard? Yeah, that's what's happening here. The breaking news today, the union representing Miami-Dade police officers said in a statement that Tyreek Hill was uncooperative and was only redirected to the ground while in handcuffs during his detainment. I'll say this again. I wasn't there. Tyreek Hill's a really bad guy. He's a bad guy. Go Google his life and the way he's treated women and all the other things in his personal life. Tyreek Hill's a bad guy. Everyone should be treated fairly by police officers, no matter their skin color or gender. Everyone should be treated with respect and dignity the right way. So there's going to be more on this investigation to see what happens. Maybe it goes away like Scottie Scheffler. But give me a break with all the people coming to the defense of Tyreek Hill like he's some saint. Give me a bleeping break on Tyreek Hill. Got a big show coming up with Q, who was at the press conference today. I'll have a full analysis and recap of everything that went down in the Raiders' loss out in Los Angeles next.
Appreciate it. Thank you, guys.